It's really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Welcome to Monday Afternoon. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch from the Allstate Skyline Studio high atop the Chicago River. Thanks very much for tuning in on this first day of the work week. You heard Elise Glink's voice there. She'll be along a little bit later in the program. And so when it comes to investing, are you trying to be socially conscious? You invest in companies that are only doing good, whether it's for the environment or whatever. The knock always has been that that's nice, good for you, but you can't really get the same return on your buck. That seems to be changing. We'll talk to Elise about that a little bit later. Also about the value when it comes to equality in the workplace, diversity and equality, and how that leads to increased productivity and creativity as well, coming up in the second half hour. But on Mondays, generally, we spend it with the folks from Chicago Inno, the first half hour at any rate. And in the studio, managing editor, Jim Dalkey, right? That's the right title. Yeah.
Yeah.
And senior editor managing, and Catherine Davis is here as well. Catherine, welcome back. You were off last week.
Yes, I was.
You were at Machu Picchu?
Yeah, hiked up to 8,000 feet.
Ah, yeah. I hope you had a great trip, did you?
It was. It was a great trip.
Let's start with Kraft Heinz. You know, we talked a year ago about the fact that they launched this Springboard, which is it's their own incubator, right? They're looking for food companies that are going to pay off for them down the road.
Yeah, Kraft Heinz, you know, more than just mac and cheese and ketchup, right? I mean, this they're doing a lot of really interesting things around tech and startups, and part of that piece of that puzzle is their Springboard Incubator. So this is something that they just launched last year. So this is their second cohort of companies, and so they basically provide about $50,000 in seed funding, up to an additional $50,000 from that, really provide them a space to work, access to resource, and some business capital and other resources along those lines.
Do they then get a share of the company?
Right. So they're going to be doing some investing in these companies. So that's part of the process as well. They have also a more formal venture fund called Evolve Ventures, which also just launched recently. And that is a big $100 million VC fund that's also based here in Chicago. They actually used a couple of local tech folks to head that project up. So Kraft Heinz really kind of doubling down on its tech efforts in Chicago.
Now, one of the companies last year, Catherine, I don't know if you remember, I think it was Quavo's, I don't exactly recall, but I think they were snack chips made out of egg whites.
That's right. And they were actually founded at the University of Chicago, and they won the university's new venture challenge, and they've been kind of, you know, a really popular and interesting food startup here in Chicago.
So that's the sort of thing that Kraft Heinz is looking for, one of the companies they chose last year.
Exactly. I mean, there's a theme with all these companies. It's very healthy, 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 right? So everything is non-GMO, gluten-free, allergen-free, all of these companies. So the one is actually based in Chicago called Blake's Seed Based. They're this one Chicago-based company. What they do is they create an allergen-free snack bar using seeds instead of nuts.
So if you are worried about being allergic to nuts, you eat pumpkin seeds instead. This sounds like a good... I would eat this regardless of my allergies.
I know. It's funny. Sometimes I see a company that's doing all this super healthy stuff, and it sounds kind of good, and other times it's like, this is a little too much. I'd rather just eat the gross stuff.
In this case, I'll take the salty pumpkin seeds. What is Brammy, Brooklyn-based Brammy?
So basically, Brammy...
I know what these are.
Yeah, so basically built from like legume snacks. So basically typically found in the Mediterranean. This is kind of like a different take on the dry snack food. It's actually like a little bit moist, so
they're
marinated.
They're lupini beans.
Yeah. So,
So 25 years ago, when Al and Ed were on the radio here in WGN Radio, they would go for lupini beans in Little Italy and bring them back, and you would squeeze them out of the pod and just eat. They were like soy beans or edamame.
Yeah, exactly.
They were like edamame, but a lot bigger, saltier and tasty.
Yeah, and a great, you know, way to eat a healthy snack on the go, right? So rather than just thinking about eating, you know, crackers that are all packaged up and full of sugar and sodium, this is a little healthier.
So does it come in a jar, or how does it work?
So it comes in like a package, basically. So it's kind of like you tear it open.
Like you would get see a packet of olives or things like that.
Yeah.
Lupini beans, Catherine, they're the next big thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing about, because I'm like thinking about like Blake's seed based, you know, and that sounds kind of like ew, but I see this really coming in handy in schools, right? Where there's so many allergies and you have to be really conscious of what you bring in for snacks or whatever. And this is a good way to avoid all that.
It's certainly a built-in market. I mean, if there are schools that ban nuts, well, that, you know, you can bring this
in
right away.
My wife is a second grade teacher, and they have entire classroom. Her entire classroom is peanut-free. You know, no peanuts.
Right.
Yeah, can't bring in an entire room.
Right. So the kids couldn't bring anything like that for their lunch, I would imagine.
Right.
And here you've got someone you can give you a snack bar to.
For sure.
So it could be brilliant even for people who aren't allergic.
The kids' snack market, I think, is really interesting, especially for a lot of these health foods, because as, you know, millennial parents, they kind of take their sort of healthy eating and bring it onto their kids. They're going to want to pack their lunches with a bunch of healthy foods as well.
And that's where Tiny Giants comes in, right? Tiny Giants is a yogurt company for kids?
Yeah, basically created a plant-based yogurt snack for kids. So again, it's organic, non-GMO, no added sweeteners, so a super healthy kind of yogurt alternative to throw in your kid's lunchbox.
Orion loves, well, he does not love, he hates the term almond milk, you know, and he'll mention it if he's listening later, but he's like, I've never seen anyone milking an almond before. It shouldn't be called almond milk. And now I see one of the companies in this cohort is Origin Almond, and they're selling their product not as an almond milk, but as an almond juice. What's the difference?
That's right. So this is a cold-pressed almond juice. So they're cold-pressing these almonds to create a juice. And so I think it's similar, but it's just like a little more drinkable maybe than the milk. It's not quite as thick, right? So yeah, like, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of the traditional milk brands are pretty frustrated at the trend of almonds taking over, right? So now we're starting to sort of seeing them kind of creep into the juice marketplace as well.
All right, so this might be like juice boxes of almond juice instead of different flavors, I would imagine?
Yeah, a bunch of different flavors, and basically kind of like the base of it is this almond juice, and it basically contains just 1 gram of sugar per container, so really, really cutting down on the sweetener.
Now, Catherine, if Jussie Smollett or R. Kelly were, say, in legal trouble and they couldn't find a lawyer, you wrote about a company that could maybe help them?
Yeah. So a new Chicago startup, it's called LawCo. And, you know, they are an online and app-based platform that matches people with attorneys on demand. So basically, you can go onto their website and be like, my house is being foreclosed on. I need some legal representation. And the company says that they will match you with an attorney nearby as quickly as possible.
So is it kind of like an Angie's List for lawyers?
Yeah, basically. You know, and the thing is, I was talking to the founder, and she said that this is really a way to allow independent attorneys to, you know, find clients. Because if you're a small law firm, or if you're just, you know, kind of working for yourself, it can be hard to get matched with clients all the time.
Right.
And this really helps facilitate
that. Yeah, I like that part of the story, because we think about the client finding the lawyers, but here's a way for lawyers to find clients rather than, just putting the shingle out on the street.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't the only marketplace doing this. I mean, there's a couple of San Francisco startups like Rocket Lawyer and Up Counsel who are kind of doing this too. So really kind of seeing which side of the marketplace has the most demand. Is it people who really need to find a way to find a lawyer, or is it lawyers that, you know, have some downtime and are willing to work on kind of different cases on the side?
Because when you're trying to find a lawyer, I mean, it's one of those things that your friends and family probably don't have a lot of experience with. It's like a diamond guy, maybe, or, you know, so they may have used someone in the past, but that doesn't make them an authority on who's a good lawyer, who's a bad lawyer. I don't know that, LawCo would be any better at that, but at least it's an assistance in finding a lawyer rather than just kind of out of the blue calling whoever you see down the street.
And, you know, just kind of providing a different level of transparency too, right? Because I'm sure that they can connect you with different lawyers who are experts in certain fields, and maybe there's a rating component. And
right.
So now you're kind of getting a lot more information really at the tip of your finger with LawCo.
And so the lawyers pay them, right? The clients don't pay LawCo.
Exactly. So LawCo makes its money by charging the attorneys for making the connection for them.
So when I was younger playing doctor with the stethoscope, there was no artificial intelligence involved whatsoever, just some imagination. That's changing, right? Who wrote this? Jim Dunkey?
Yeah, that's right. So there's a startup out of San Francisco called Echo, and basically what it's made is a smart stethoscope. So it has got...
I can't believe there hasn't been one yet.
I know. You would think that we've gotten there to this point yet, but basically that's exactly what they built. So they are working on kind of a little pilot project with Northwestern Medicine right now to kind of test this with some of their facilities. So basically what it's able to do is, you know, when you go into the hospital, if you're checked up, the doctor uses the stethoscope to kind of listen for heart murmurs or anything irregular going with your heartbeat. This smart stethoscope can kind of do that for the doctor. So it's got tens of thousands of hours of heart data kind of already in its system and can listen to your heartbeat and know if something is off.
Catherine, it almost seems like the doctor wouldn't be needed for this procedure, for this process now, right? You could, I mean, really, you could have a nurse put the stethoscope in the right spot because you're just getting a computer readout anyway.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure they still, you know, want the doctors overlooking this just because, you know, then you kind of get the best information. But, you know, it's one of those things where we continue to see kind of tech being, you know, infiltrating healthcare, right? And it's like, you know, a cool startup from San Francisco partnering with Northwestern here and studying the device and everything is really cool.
But I'll imagine too, if you could get the price of the stethoscope down so much that you could put it in your house, you know, so you wouldn't even need to go into the doctor to get anybody to take it. You could take it yourself every month or every 6 months or whatever.
Well, so that's kind of the point I'm getting to, where you, when you start a doctor's visit, the nurse or practitioner takes your blood pressure, your pulse. They do that. You know, they're trusted with that. You don't need to be a doctor. If we're at the point where you don't necessarily need to listen yourself, why couldn't the nurse administer the stethoscope? The doctor would come in and reading the data.
Well, one thing that this test is all about is really just determining the accuracy of it. Really, they're not necessarily going all in on this new tech just yet, right? So they're using it just with, I think, 800 of their patients so far, just to kind of get a sense for how accurate is this thing, right? You still want, I think, at the end of the day, a medical professional who's there, who's been through this, who has a keen eye for this. So I think what really the biggest benefit is just giving doctors an additional tool in their toolkit, right? Giving them something that's going to help them be more accurate in their diagnoses.
What do you think, Catherine? I think that in 15 years, doctors will no longer be using stethoscopes.
Possibly. I mean, you know, there's other startups out there that, you know, have kind of heart monitoring devices that are meant to be used at home and by consumers. And, you know, you don't need a physician there at all times for them. So this could just kind of be part of that trend.
All right, we'll see. Last week we talked with an associate or assistant vice president at DocuSign, who I had come from SpringCM, and DocuSign purchased them, and they just announced their sort of changing the name here in Chicago and moving in, right, from the West Coast. And that's kind of a sign of the times, a trend, West Coast companies coming here and getting bigger.
Exactly. So this DocuSign now has a Chicago office after its acquisition from SpringCM last year, bought them for about $220 million. So yeah, DocuSign, big, you know, electronic signature company, Silicon Valley based, now has a growing Chicago tech office out here. So yeah, exactly. Like you said, we're seeing a lot of West Coast firms come out here and expand in Chicago. Uber, for example, is adding hundreds of new jobs for its Uber freight division. Actually, Uber is now the second, Chicago's office for Uber is its second largest in the country behind the Valley.
Wow.
So really interesting to kind of see all these companies, Facebook, Google, all doing the same thing.
Now, SpringCM won Tech Madness last year, right? And Tech Madness is kicking off for Chicago, I know, this week or next week. Voting started, right?
Voting started on Friday. Yeah, I'm not saying that this Tech Madness winner will always be acquired just a couple years later.
A couple hundred million,
Right, but really what this competition is all about is a March Madness style bracket competition, but for Chicago startups. And it's a fun, kind of friendly competition. Our readers get to vote based on who they would invest in. But really what it is a really interesting snapshot at 64 great Chicago tech startups.
So and you look at the variety of companies that are represented, right? You've got the big ones like Uptake and things like that. Foxtrot, which is a favorite of mine. I like to watch them. They continue to grow. And then the Crafty Boys. I love Crafty. The guys who move into office workplace kitchens,
sort of
right?
Like, yeah, kegs on demand, but also just like general kitchen supplies for tech companies. And
Catherine,
other businesses.
Who are you watching in this?
Definitely Second Kitchen. So they're a newer startup and one we just recently profiled. But basically they, you know, give bars the opportunity to serve food, right, from nearby restaurants. So they're a cool consumer startup. You know, they also have that B2B element, but I'm interested to see how they grow and I'd put money on them.
Jim, you have a favorite?
Cameo. So we rank these businesses based on the amount of funding that they've raised. So there are, if you were a gambling man, there'd probably be some low seeds here that you would bet on. Cameo's one that's pretty, I think, a double digit seed. They've got a pretty good chance of advancing later on. Hunt Club is a really interesting recruiting business that's helping a lot of other companies in town kind of staff up. So that's a really interesting company. Yeah, I mean, Tovala has got like a really interesting opportunity.
Tovala.
Yeah, so,
the
eternal
Tovala.
The great thing about Tech Madness is it's a great way to see 64 companies that we're writing about every day. Everything from the big tech companies like Tempus and Uptake to some of these smaller businesses.
All right, so you can check that out at ChicagoInno.com, right?
And get your votes in.
Yeah, it's Chicago, right? Do you have to vote just once or can you vote often?
You can vote often, yeah. I think maybe it might be once a day, but yeah, you can vote multiple times.
Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks.
Thanks very much, Don Klepp and Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Pallavi Verma is in the newsroom, or in the studio, I should say, Senior Managing Director of the Midwest at Accenture. Pallavi, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
Okay, so let's just start first about power, because Crane says you are one of the 50 most powerful women in business in the city of Chicago. What does that feel like? Little muscle here.
It's humbling when you look at the amazing group of people that are on that list. Yeah. So I think power for me is about influence and being able to influence others, help other people be successful. So that's kind of how I define power.
Tell me about the study you did, Getting to Equal 2019, that Accenture did. Interesting to me that it's about equality in the workplace, which isn't necessarily diversity in the workplace.
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting piece of research I found. And I think what it does is actually focus on how the culture of equality drives innovation. And if you think about why innovation is so important today in this world, I saw a recent statistic about the S&P 500, and companies were on the S&P 500 historically for 60 years. Now it's under 20 years.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, so, why is that?
Well, because I think companies are being disrupted, right? There's M&A, and then there's disruption. They fall off. They don't succeed. Things like that. So I think that being innovative is really important right now in this day and age.
And when we talk about equality, as I understand it, there probably are more than one factor, but the thing that resonated with me was the idea that that anyone can advance, that you have opportunity there.
Yes.
Is that the...
Yeah, I think that's right. So it's equality is about creating an environment where everybody can equally succeed.
Right.
Right. And the research shows that 95% of people business leaders believe that innovation is important. 76% of business leaders believe they're creating an environment of innovation. Only 42% of employees actually believe
that. So the bosses think they're doing a better job of it than the employees.
Yeah.
Who's the final judge on that? I guess it would be the employees.
I think the employees. I know it's a classic disconnect between bosses and employees about what bosses think and what employees think.
Right.
But I think I view it as an opportunity.
And how do you measure the increase in, you view it as an opportunity if the bosses say, hey, I'm a little disconnected here?
I view it as an opportunity for companies to do something about it so that they can be more innovative.
How do they do something about it?
I think there's a couple of things they can do to create an environment of equality. And that is really around having flexible work arrangements, creating training, allowing people to work from home, and respecting what I'd call work-life balance. And why are those important? Because it allows each person to bring their best self to work, which I think then translates to being able to be innovative.
Guidelines for this, textbooks for this, or does it just sort of have to be organic?
I think there's certainly guidelines for how to create more flexible work arrangements, training. I think there's lots of companies that are doing great jobs at that. For example, for us, we've done last year we spent close to $1 billion on training our own people.
Wow.
And that is really an important investment in our people.
And training your own people, are you retraining your own people, or are you training your people for new things?
I think it's training people for new things.
Yeah.
Retraining on old things, we see the pace of change happening so fast, it has to be new things.
So that's equality. How does diversity, how is diversity not equality, but a component of equality?
I think that diverse, there's a couple things. One is that you want diversity in your workplace. There's many statistics around why diversity of thinking is good for a business. So a lot of places have kind of followed that and said, okay, now I have a diverse workplace. So this is the next step in that, right? Which is, okay, now you have a bunch of diversity.
Right.
Now create an environment where everybody actually feels equally able to contribute.
You know, I've been doing this show for, I don't know how long, 4 or 5 years or so. And I've learned a lot. And that's one of the things I learned. I used to think, as a white guy, I used to think diversity was about fairness, not about increased productivity or creativity, and the fact of different voices benefiting the company. I mean, that's something that I think is lost maybe on a lot of white guys out there, or at least was a few years ago.
Yeah, and there's a lot of great statistics that say companies that have diverse leadership, as an example, perform better. And there's, you know, longitudinal statistics around the performance of those companies.
So how do you measure the creativity of a company? I mean, that if this equality is there, how do you measure that one company is doing better creatively than another company?
I think it's all about the results, right? If you go back to the fact that every company at this point, given the pace of change in technology and digital transformation, everybody needs to be creative and be thinking about how are they transforming their company in order to survive. So I think it comes down to just basic performance of a company. You cannot succeed in this world, I believe, if you're not continuing to innovate and be creative.
Paula Viverma is the Senior Managing Director of the Midwest at Accenture. Thanks for coming by today. I appreciate it. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks very much, Ori and Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, and we're sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. We thank them for that. On the phone line now is Elise Glink. She is the brains behind ThinkLink.com and also Best Bunny Moves, that HR app for businesses that helps employees measure their financial stress and then dial it down. Speaking of financial stress, Elise, welcome back. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Financial stress. I want to invest in a way that helps the world. I want to do good with my money, but at least only if it helps me make a lot of money.
Well, impact investing, which is what investing for the good of the world is now officially called, has been around for a while. But the good news is that while you think that you don't want it to be the expense of your own pocketbook, it doesn't have to be. So most of the time, and especially last year in 2018, sustainable funds, impact investing funds, outperformed their benchmarks, and 63% landed in the top half of their category. So they do pretty well.
So, but 2018, was it an outlier year? I know it was a really good year for those funds.
Well, actually, if the strong performance holds out, if you look over 3 and 5 years, 2018 was a particularly fabulous year, but but we actually saw really strong. There's been just a surge for impact funds, and they've done very, very well, and they're continuing to do well. So we're not seeing the evidence that if you're making an impact investment, that you're not going to do well financially.
So are we at the point where people are investing in impact investment funds blindly for the return of it? I mean, only for the return, world be damned, this is a good investment and I'm going to make a lot of money on it?
I don't think that that's how people think about investments, really, Steve. I think what they think is, I want to do good for the world, and I want to do well financially. I don't want to hurt myself by doing good for the world. Very few people have enough money for that, so they want to do both, and the good news is that you can do both. And I want to call out a particular fund that started just at the end of last year, which is the YWCA of Metropolitan Chicago was instrumental in starting the Woman Impact Fund, WOMN, which is now trading, and they did exactly that. Unpaid advisory board position with them, but they went through that whole conversation about, will people invest to do good if they do or do not make money? And that was a big part of the thinking as they went through it. And what they discovered through the research is people really want to do good and they want to make money. And this is a way to do it.
And so and the number of these sorts of funds has been growing greatly right over the past. I mean, I remember talking about this maybe 10 years ago, but the number of choices is greatly increased in the past 5 years or so.
It has about 50% of an increase. And so you're looking at around 351 sustainable equity and bond funds that, you know, up 50% just over the prior year. And so you're seeing a tremendous amount of interest in these funds. Younger people, millennials and Gen Zs who bring money into the market, they're investing really with an eye towards making sure the companies are toeing the line with regard to gender and pay equity. They want to make sure that they're toeing the line with regard to the environment and natural resources, and they're walking the talk with their dollars.
Who's putting these together? I mean, you just mentioned the YWCA, but I mean, are there Fidelity do-good funds? Are there, you know, I mean, are there Vanguard big institutional companies getting involved as well?
Yeah, there are. You basically can go to almost any of the big investment companies and find sustainable funds there. And the reason they're doing that, again, is there's so much interest from investors. And so if you want that, and let's say you're at Fidelity, or if you were at Vanguard, or, you know, any Charles Schwab, you could pick any of the number. You could go there and talk to some of the people about the different funds. You can also go to Morningstar and do some research there, another one of our homegrown companies, to find some of the funds that do a little bit better than others. And a lot of that has to do with how those funds are put together, what they screen for, and the companies that actually, you know, make it through the screening. That's where the return is generated.
It seems like if you're a bigger company, I mean, I understand you want to come up with these because they're attractive to buyers, but it seems like it could be fraught with peril as well, because you will have all these buyers always looking at all the actions of every company that the fund is invested in, right? There's always going to be pressure.
Well, I actually think that having that kind of pressure is really good for a company's executive board, right? I think they should be thinking about these things. I think we live in a world where being, you know, having gender equity and pay equity and making sure that we're making good use of the world's natural resources, I think that's something that every company has to think about today. And if this makes them think a little harder about it, it's probably all the better.
I was thinking more of the terms of the fund managers, though, that there'd be pressure to dump one company or pick up another company, things like that.
Well, they typically, the way that these funds, again, are set up is you might have 15 or 20 different screens, right? Things that you have to filter companies for. And so in any given year, companies will go into or fall out of the screens, and so then they'll automatically get eliminated. It's less about the fund manager picking them in most cases when you have some of these funds, like that's the way the YWCA's Woman Fund operates. Companies that meet the screen get included, and the ones that don't, and they hope that that will encourage more companies to, in their case, promote women and women's issues.
Elise Glink, thanks for joining us. Have a great week.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Steve.